Support for this public radio podcast comes from Mellon Financial Corporation, helping financially successful individuals and families protect and maximize their assets through the practice of wealth management. Mellon.com. And by Prosper.com, America's marketplace for people-to-people loans. Prosper.com, where you can compete to bid on loans to fellow Americans.
We're a little down in the mouth.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. More people think this country is headed for recession. A Reuters Zogby poll out this morning says 43% of likely voters expect a recession in the next year. That's up from 40% a month ago. That feeling cuts across all age groups, ethnicities, and political persuasions. Pollster John Zogby called it an across-the-board funk, and he says the economic mood is worse now than it was in the last recession in 2001. The stock markets might be snapping out of their latest funk, though. In Asia today, stocks climbed about 0.5%. That's after 5 straight days of losses. The Dow starts out at 13,232. It gained 65 points yesterday. The Nasdaq was up 21. The S&P 500 added 9. In Europe this morning, shares are down just a tad. Today, the European Commission made a new healthcare proposal. It would allow people to travel to another EU country to get treatment, then come home and give their home country the bill. We're joined now by our reporter Megan Williams in Rome. Megan, what prompted this idea?
Well, this all stems from a case with a 75-year-old woman. She was a British citizen who went to France. She said she didn't want to wait a full year for a hip replacement, and so went and had the operation there and wanted to be reimbursed by England. So she took the case to the EU court, and they ruled that she should be reimbursed by England, and that triggered this proposed change of rules.
Well, that was just one case, though. Is this something that has happened more than once? Is this something that's ongoing?
Yeah, I mean, that was the tip of the iceberg, really. There are a lot of people, particularly in England, which has had a lot of problems with its National Health Service, who can't get timely care. So a lot of British citizens want to go elsewhere within Europe for health care.
So, Megan, what kind of opposition is there to this idea?
Well, obviously, you know, people who work within Britain's National Health Service, they'd like to improve it, no doubt. But their fear is that if there's a long wait or if someone's not satisfied with the level of care in Britain, that they're going to leave the country. And, of course, Britain wants to stop that to a certain extent because the cost is really high. And in the long run, that will undermine the services that are being offered within Britain.
Okay, Megan Williams in Rome. Thank you.
Thanks, Scott.
This is the Morning Report for Wednesday, December 19th on Marketplace.org. South Africans woke up with a political hangover today. The country's ruling party had to make a tough call between an incumbent who's had some economic struggles or a man tarnished by allegations of corruption. Gretchen Wilson reports from Johannesburg.
South Africa's President Thabo Mbeki has championed free trade during his 8 years in office, making him a darling of the IMF and World Bank. But 40% of South Africans remain unemployed and shut out of the country's economic growth. That's one reason delegates overwhelmingly voted for his former deputy, Jacob Zuma. Zuma, who was sacked last year after being implicated in a bribery scandal, is now in pole position to lead Africa's biggest economy in 2009. Zuma's backers, namely the trade unions and the Communist Party, are hoping for a change. But political analyst David Monyai says the country's economic direction is not likely to be rocked by ideology.
He has given assurance to the international business community that he is going to stick to the current economic policies.
That is, if everything goes according to plan. Zuma may be recharged with corruption next year. In Johannesburg, I'm Gretchen Wilson for Marketplace.
Twice a year, the U.S. Treasury Department releases something called the Foreign Exchange Report. Today is one of those days. It's a chance for the government to analyze the trading practices of other countries. One country will get a lot of attention in this report. Alisa Roth has more.
Yes, you guessed it. China.
There is an attempt to try to get China, in particular, to allow faster and greater appreciation of its currency.
Jim Barth is a senior fellow at the Milken Institute. He says the U.S. worries China's keeping its currency artificially cheap, and that's making the trade deficit worse. The Treasury's never actually used this report to accuse China of manipulating its currency for trade advantage, but everyone will be watching to see if the U.S. does something different this time. Still, Bart doesn't think the report, no matter how strongly worded, will make much difference.
The U.S. is going to have a hard time pushing China to do anything. I think China, as a major country, can't afford to be given the rest of the world the view that China is going to do whatever the U.S. asks it to do.
Barth says China's worried that exporting less to the U.S. would mean manufacturing less, and that could lead to problems with unemployment. In New York, I'm Alisa Roth for Marketplace.
This week, truck drivers all over the country are braving snow and ice to deliver holiday packages on time. And because of a recent decision by the Bush administration, those truckers could be logging longer hours. Sam Eaton reports.
The rules allow truckers to drive up to 11 hours a day and up to 77 hours over a 7-day period. The White House reinstated the higher driving limits last week after they were struck down twice in the U.S. Court of Appeals. A Senate hearing takes up the issue today. At issue is the safety of those longer hours.
All the research shows that after about 8 hours, that driving degrades and these truckers get tired.
Joan Claybrook is with the consumer watchdog group Public Citizen, which is filing a motion in court today to have the rule revoked. She says truck driver fatalities have increased every year since the 11-hour driving policy was first instated in 2003. But the American Trucking Association says overall the crash rate is at its lowest point in more than 3 decades. And it says the lost productivity associated with shorter hours isn't justified. I'm Sam Eaton for Marketplace.
Half the battle of holiday shopping is thinking of the perfect gift. Gift cards are an easy solution, reduce some of the stress. And there's another one that's becoming popular, online gift registries. Dan Ankeles has more.
The holidays are supposed to be a festive time, but then the craziness begins.
I think my least favorite thing is trying to come up with the perfect gift for 25 different people all in the space of a week.
And the tension kicks in.
When people don't treat each other good because they're so stressed and they're mean to each other.
And then did you get the right presents? Why not use the internet to find out?
With our system, basically you can add absolutely anything, and that goes from products to services. You can add opera tickets. You can add a night of babysitting for your children.
Nancy Lee is president of MyRegistry.com. The website lets people create a gift registry complete with links to stores. When people buy gifts this way, MyRegistry gets commissions. Thousands have created holiday-themed registries for themselves or their families on the site, says Lee. It's a discreet way to give people options.
You know, it puts you in a very awkward position when people ask you what kind of gift they should buy for your children, because you don't know how much money they want to spend.
This way, you can buy something you can afford or contribute what you want towards an expensive gift. Cecilia Fatzinger, an internet-savvy homemaker from Bowie, Maryland, has 11 children to worry about this holiday season. But she's appalled at the crass commercialism the service promotes.
What I think will happen is that kids, starting at a young age, will start thinking, I can have whatever I want. It's about me and about what I get, not about, you know, Christmas being a celebration of the birth of Christ.
Fatzinger says the service solves a problem that actually helps build children's character.
We're not going to say, he got something better than I did. We're not going to tell people, I already have that, or I didn't want that, because that's being disrespectful and rude and not grateful. And that's not what Christmas is about.
And, she says, not getting what you want can teach a valuable lesson.
Well, I think it's good to be disappointed sometimes. It's called realistic. It's called real life.
In Washington, I'm Dan Ankeles for Marketplace. Dan Bobby!
Get you anything, my friend, if it makes you feel all right. 'Cause I don't care too much for money, but money can buy me love. I'll give you all I've got to give if you say you love me too.
There just isn't an easy solution to the subprime mess. And there probably shouldn't be. No pain, no gain, as they say. But let's talk about some of the proposed solutions. We'll start in New England, where five banks are pledging $100 million to help some people refinance their loans. Here's Stacey Vanek Smith.
The New England banks are hoping to help one group of struggling homeowners. That is, people who can afford their loan payments now, but who won't be able to afford them when their rates adjust and their loan payments jump. The banks would offer new, more affordable loans to borrowers. Analyst Christopher Thornburg says the plan doesn't go far enough.
Most of the people who look for this kind of help actually don't qualify for the help because it cannot be refinanced. When you actually look at their income, look how much they borrowed, it's clear that these people can't afford these houses, period.
Thornburg says for homeowners whose loans can be made manageable, there could be a whole different problem.
You save this person from being foreclosed on, and as a result of that, they lost 20% of their equity, and they're in a deeply underwater position. Have we really helped this person?
Thornburg says we can expect to see up to $3 trillion of home equity disappear over the next few years. I'm Stacey Vanek Smith for Marketplace.
Now on to some of the other ideas out there. Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson is touring the country this week, touting the White House plan. Rates on certain loans would be frozen for 5 years. Some of the presidential candidates are offering alternative solutions. Commentator Robert Rice shares his thoughts.
It's an old saw that when people are drowning, Republicans throw them a rope so short it doesn't reach them, while Democrats throw them a rope so long it can't pull them out. For homeowners in danger of drowning when their mortgages are reset at higher rates over the next 2 years, the Bush administration's response is the short rope. Freeze rates for people with good credit histories who are likely to be able to meet the payments at such fixed rates. Fine as far as it goes, but most of the nearly 2 million families in danger of losing their homes won't qualify. Now, some Democrats, meanwhile, want to throw out too much rope. Take, for example, Hillary Clinton's suggested temporary moratorium on foreclosures. That's fine for homeowners at risk, but it would make banks more wary about offering mortgages to anyone, even families with good credit histories. Either way, too little rope or too much will cause more people to lose their homes or not be able to buy one, further depressing home prices and adding to losses on mortgage-related securities, which means a continuing credit crunch and that dread combination of recession and inflation called stagflation, from which even the Fed can't rescue us. So how much rope is just right? A few days ago, Alan Greenspan suggested throwing it precisely to the people who are going down. Give direct aid to struggling homeowners, analogous to money given disaster victims, so they can meet their payments. Better to bail out families who didn't know the risks they were getting into than lenders who had every reason to know. Better to pay the costs now and get this behind us than suffer risks and uncertainties that slow the economy for years. Greenspan should know because he's partly responsible for the mess. A few years ago, he made money so cheap, lenders shoved it out the door to any borrower who wanted it. And then he forgot the Fed was supposed to oversee lenders to make sure they were acting responsibly. Maybe Greenspan's new idea is his way of making amends.
Robert Reich was Labor Secretary under President Clinton. His new book is called Super Capitalism. You can share your thoughts with us online at our website. It's marketplace.org. In Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for tuning in, and have a great day.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.